And how did you get into it?
In 1982 and 83, the farm underwent a big change, and a lot of us chose to move away. And so I, my family, and a lot of other people chose to come back to California, where we had started. And I moved out here with my family, and Matthew moved out here with his family. Now, Matthew had worked at the old Whole Earth Catalog, which is what Stuart Brand was most famous for. He was given a job at Whole Earth when he left the farm, working on another catalog they were doing. And in the process of him being there in 1983 and 84, they started to set up the well. Larry and Stuart conceived it, and then they made a deal to make this entity a business that was half owned by Whole Earth and half owned by Larry's company, right? And so they're going to start this business together. They hired Matthew to be the first guy to run it. He had the technical skills, the technical expertise, and the social skills, the business knowledge, all of that. And so it was a one-person operation. When I left the farm, I didn't know anything about computers. I mean, I was a technology-friendly person, but I was working as an auto mechanic. I was fixing cars in San Rafael, and I wasn't very happy about having to do that, but I had a family to support, and it's what I knew how to do. But the guy I worked for, he was not a very honest man. He ran a car dealership. There's a lot of trickery and deception that happens in the world of automobiles. So I wasn't very comfortable working there. And at the end of 1985, the well had already started and Matthew was doing it. And so in that fall of 1985, we were at a party. I was basically complaining that I was fixing cars for this guy and I was going to quit the job and do something else. Didn't know what. Probably had to get another mechanic job. And so Matthew says, well, I need some help. Why don't you come work for me? I need someone to help grow this, get more members, get more usage. So essentially to be the marketing person for this business. And I didn't really know anything about marketing. But because I had lived at the farm and because things that Matthew knew about my upbringing, you know, I joined the counterculture at a very young age. I was still a teenager. And so I didn't really go to college, but I was raised by very educated, high-achieving family. So my father was very high achiever. He was a political person and a business person, both. I grew up having to do a great deal of socializing and interacting with all sorts of people. I was brought up to be that way. And then I lived in this huge commune, and I was well-spoken, pretty good writer. And so he just thought that I had the social skills and the motivation to work with this group and try to get more people to be part of this group endeavor. It wasn't really clear what it was exactly, but you know, he just thought I could do it. And as far as the technical part, I said, well, I don't know how to use a computer. He goes, oh, you can learn that. It's not that hard, and you know, you can fix cars. They're pretty complicated, so I'm sure you could figure out how computers work. And so I said, okay, and I did it. I just went for it. And so I showed up at the job that first day, and he sat me down at a desk that had a first edition Macintosh. And that was actually the first time I ever used a computer, first time I ever sat in front of one. So it was true. I did have to learn that, and it wasn't that hard. I did fine with that. The office was in Sausalito, right on the north side of the Golden Gate Bridge above San Francisco. And on the north side of Sausalito, there is a neighborhood. It used to be a big shipyard during the war, and it got sort of overtaken by artists and not exactly outlaws, but people who really were not thriving members of the American economy. A lot of counterculture got going there, and many people lived in houseboats and floating structures that were almost like art objects. And some of them were old boats, whatever, and they're still there. There's still lots and lots of them. So there's some offices. It's odd because it's so close to San Francisco and it's so close to rich Marin County, but it's this old kind of maritime neighborhood. And it's like, it's on this road called Gate 5 Road, warehouses and boatyards and stuff. And so there's just this office back there. And the well office was in the same building as the Whole Earth magazine office. They were really attached. and it was extremely pleasant to work there. I was so happy to be there. Wow, I'm not fixing cars. I'm not getting my hands destroyed. And suddenly now I'm interacting on a regular basis with all these really smart people who are writers and journalists and technicians, technology people, teachers. It was really the whole spectrum of knowledge worker was represented there. And then so suddenly, you know, after living in this commune with the same people, wonderful people, but the same people for years back in the deep country of Tennessee. And in fact, after I left the farm, I'm driving west with my family in this old car and I'm going to locate in California. I'm going to start working a regular job. You know, I'm going to have to support my own family. I'm going to do all these things. And I didn't know what the future held. And I was young, you know, I was only 32. But I remember saying to myself while I was driving along, you know, driving across the west, hours on end. To me, it was going home. You know, my mother was here. My brothers were here. People I had grown up with were out here. The whole farm had started in San Francisco. I went to high school in San Francisco. I mean, it was just going home for me. And my family was very, very interested in me coming back. They didn't want me to live because I lived in Tennessee. And then in 1978 to 1982, I moved to the Northeast. I lived in New York City as part of the farm. And I lived in Washington, D.C. as well. I was already kind of urban in my outlook. And so, yeah, I was just going back. But, you know, I knew that I was breaking away from a formal relationship with this community that I lived in since I was a teenager. And so, you know, I was saying to myself, well, you know, I don't know how this is going to play out or what's going to happen. But one thing I do know is that I'm not finished with community in one form or another. Something is out there that's going to let me be part of or do community with people. I didn't know what form, I didn't know who it was going to be, but I just remember real clearly feeling that. And so then when Matthew brought me into the well, suddenly there I was with a bunch of people who were all really smart and they loved talking. We called it talking, but it was really writing. It was talking by writing, having these written conversations. They were knowledge workers, many people who worked on their own. They were freelance, a lot of them consultants. And they had their desk and their chair and their computer and their modem to the phone line. And they often were surrounded by books and all the things. And this was their comfortable home, totally familiar surrounding. But then suddenly they're in a situation where they're having very intelligent, very detailed conversations with people they don't really know by looking at words on a screen. It was all new. It was new for them. It was new for everyone at the time. You know how these things start out? Like, a lot of people were just excited about the fact that you could do this, the technology enabling this. But a lot of these folks were, you know, people who worked on their own. A lot of them lived alone, or, you know, a lot of them didn't have kids. And a lot of them were writers, or they were programmers, or people who, you know, had to get certain things done. And so, you know, you're working along, and after an hour's time or something, you can sort of stop. And then without even having to get up, you can visit with other people, or you can talk about something that's important to you, or you can ask somebody questions. A lot of it was about questions, you know, like, here's all these smart people. I need to know something. I need to know something about my computer or my printer, or, you know, this is in the 80s when getting all this stuff to work was not that easy. So there were people with questions about technology, people who wanted to talk about the world of computing technology, people who wanted to talk about policy. What became fascinating about it was that people got to know each other and get to be more comfortable with each other. And then here you've got this place where you can converse about anything. So you can talk about business, you can talk about technology, but you can talk about politics, and you can talk about movies and art. I mean, you can talk about anything, or you can talk about your children or your pets or your house or how to fix something or your car. All of it was available. What started happening was more and more people would talk about whatever they came there to do, and then they would go over somewhere where they were talking about music or culture or food or something that was more personal rather than business.
Would you say you opened up to some extent privacy, so people's life became more public, at least to this community?
Yes. This process of people talking about a variety of things, some business, some personal, some pleasure, naturally people just started to get to know each other better in the process. It was really quite fun and enjoyable. Howard Rheingold and this other guy, Tom Mandel, cooked up this idea for a conference, for a little forum that they called True Confessions, which was just a place to tell stories about yourself and where you had been and what you had done and, you know, who you were and your upbringing. And so suddenly all these people, myself included, started talking about themselves, and it was fascinating. These are interesting, educated people doing interesting things who are all good writers. Around that same time, some of the things that emerged were not just telling stories about your past, but one guy had been adopted. He was in the process of locating his birth mother. And so he described that process, and he did find her. And so he was, you know, revealing this in real time. And there was this other guy, Jay, who lives on the East Coast in Cape Cod, Massachusetts. Had a very young daughter who had a very bad health problem. It wasn't really clear if she was going to live or die. And Jay needed to be up with her every night. While this was all taking place in the middle of the night, this guy way on the other side of the country starts writing in real time about what he's going through. It was incredibly powerful because you were kind of there with him. I mean, he's doing it in real time, but, you know, you're reading these, it's asynchronous, it's time shifted. So he does it in the middle of the night, you read it the next day, but it's like you're right there with him. I was very excited to be there. And the first couple of weeks or a month I was there, I was sort of, how am I really going to do this? You know, not really a marketer. We don't have any money anyway. I didn't know exactly how to approach it. I remember I was there at night. Once. And so one of the things that you could do, which is not unlike what you do on Facebook now, where it shows you who else is logged in, you could see that. You could see who else is logged in. You see all these user IDs. And I used to sit there and just look at it and look at it and, you know, I'd hit that button and just look and see who was there, who's there. And one night I was just staring at it and thinking about it. And I realized this is not the computer business. This is the relationship business. This is all about the relationships. I know a lot about that. And then I just thought, well, that's it. What I'm supposed to do is do whatever I have to do to make those relationships amongst those people stronger in whatever way works for them.